maybe that's why they have this grudge on me, you know?
I don't think it was that harsh, really. I think he was just concerned about the program. He was concerned there might be some kind of religious element.
I don't think so. I'm Catholic. That's it.
Yeah, well, that's enough.
You shouldn't have mentioned that.
That's enough.
Don't ever mention that again, you know.
That's enough.
I am.
You're the God here.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I also...
I mean, it's not your fault. I mean, you were brought up as a Catholic. You were told to be a Catholic.
Because I'm Filipino. 95% of Filipinos are Catholic.
And why do you think that happened?
How that happened?
Yeah, how did that happen?
The Philippines, the Spaniards.
Yeah, those rotten Spaniards came in and imposed the Pope on you.
That's right.
And you're talking about getting in under the thumb of Gloria Arroyo. I mean, get out under the thumb of that Pope.
I've done that long time
okay,
ago.
Okay, so good. You're away from the Pope.
Yes.
Our callers should be very happy about that.
Another thing, Greg. Yes. Because Bob Dobbs mentioned to me that you're against Israel.
No, against Israel. I don't really recognize the legitimacy of the state of Israel.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I'm not a two-state kind of guy.
I see, because I read the Bible, so I know, and I love the fact that God chose the Jews as a chosen people. You know
why?
Well, I'm Catholic, and I read the Bible.
But why would you? Why would you think? So you think? So when are you going to get under that guy's thumb? You've got out under the thumb of the Pope.
No.
When are you going to get out of the main man's?
I don't believe in the Pope, but I believe in the Bible.
What other books do you believe in?
Just the Bible.
That's it?
That's it.
That's the only book you believe in?
Yes.
Why?
So you said you like it. You said you like that fact.
Yes.
So you find this like an enchanting story, something that makes you warm and fuzzy.
What does that make?
What is it about that it makes you happy?
Well, because I'm thinking back about the history that happened in the earth, in the world, when it was created, and then when God did things, and when He gave the commandments, and when He was able to help the Jews get out of Egypt, you know.
Okay. So it's more about
Ben-Hur. You can just read Ben-Hur.
I can't hear
Ben-Hur.
Bob. Sorry, Bob.
Okay,
I can't hear you.
Homer.
The phone technology is weak here.
We can hear her, Greg.
Yeah, I know. She just can't hear you, but very well. They're just Bob Marshall, the person known as Bob Marshall there, said that you could just go and read Ben-Hur and get the same elements out of it.
Well, I've read Ben-Hur too.
You have? Have you read Ben-Him?
You like the Bible better.
Yeah, it's no such book as Ben-Hur.
Not Ben-Him, just Ben-Hur.
Just Ben-Hur. So the chosen people, do you think, what does that make everybody else? Chop liver?
Well, I even asked, what happened? How come there's no part where the Filipinos are part of the Bible?
Aha, very interesting. Well, the Spaniards made short work of that, didn't they? They linked you in very nicely.
Yes.
I think you've got to be deprogrammed, Eva. I really do. I really think that. I think it's okay for you to read the Bible.
You could have been the queen of Philippines.
You know, I've read it
three times,
but this time that I'm reading it, I'm trying to memorize where the characters, what they did, and you know what happened. I'm reading it again the third time.
Yeah, you read the Bible like I watch cartoons.
I read it every day.
I know all about Porky Pig and Daffy Duck and Bugs Bunny and the Goofy Gophers.
Under the thumb of that, Greg.
What?
Yeah. When are you getting out from under Disney?
I don't know. I don't know how I'm ever going to get out from under that.
You demanded that the bias here, Greg.
And there's another thing I want to
do you know? Oh, Eva, yeah. Eva,
yeah,
Eva.
Your bias is okay, Greg.
Yeah.
You're fired, Greg.
Eva, yeah. Eva, Eva. Do you, now in my home? I have two cats.
I have two dogs.
All right.
I have two. I have nothing, right. Greg.
Now, I have. I know, it's unhealthy. And now, on my mantelpiece, I have little figurines of cartoon characters, because I was in that sort of world. I collect these types of things. I don't know why. Now, is that considered bad? To have false idols?
No.
No?
Because false idols is in the idols. I don't believe in the idols that the Filipinos believe in. You know, they have statues in their homes, in the churches. That I don't believe. but I consider your ducks or your what as right. your toys.
Right, they're happy. They're happy little images of animals, anthropomorphic
yeah.
animals. Yeah. So, well, I don't know what to say to you. I don't know what to say to you about reading the Bible. I think it's fine. I don't know why you're obsessing over the Bible. Are you hoping to get something out of it? That
oh, yes.
Yeah, what?
How to be a better person. I learned that
from
the Bible.
Do you not think that you're a good person already?
I am a good person, but after I finished reading the Bible, I became a better person.
In what way?
In what way?
No.
I follow the commandments of God, and then I compare my life with the lives that are said in the Bible. Like, for example...
Has there been a lot of transgression in your life? Have you transgressed the laws of God as they've been invoked?
Yes.
You have.
Yes.
Now tell me something that you've done that where you've transgressed the laws of God, just in general form or specific if you wish, just to tell us how you've improved as a person.
How I improve? Okay.
Yeah, like what did you do before that was bad? And,
example,
or that transgressed the laws of God.
I was not very kind to people, and I was not, what do you call this? When people would approach me for the panhandlers.
Money.
For panhandlers. I'd just tell them, hey, you have to work, you know. But now I do give because I tell myself, God put me in a position wherein I can give.
All right.
You know? I'm not the one asking.
That's a good attitude.
You know what I'm
saying? He's a communist, Greg.
Yeah, I don't even do that.
God,
I don't even do that.
Permission to do that.
So you now are nice to panhandlers. Do you think that they're a little exploitive, though?
For example,
like how do we know that some?
Not a communist. Craig objects to this.
Okay, well, if I die and God asks me, what have you done?
I'll tell God.
Boy, it's so cacophonous, huh, with that Bob and the other Bob and the Dave Neufeld and everything. It just gets so cacophonous.
Day five.
Eva, what were you saying?
I was saying earlier,
yeah.
When I die and God asks me, what have you done on earth that is good, I would say, well, I have helped a person. I have prevented a person from becoming a homeless person.
Oh, how did you do that?
Well, because I have a house, right?
Yes.
And I have a basement. So the guy was living in his car, even in dead winter. So I told him, you can stay in my basement.
And what did he do?
So he did. He stayed in my basement for years.
Yeah, for years he stayed in your
he
basement.
Stayed there.
Yeah, for free.
For free?
Yes.
You are something.
Yes.
And
that's how I became a better person.
Hey, I should be... You know what? You know what, Eva? You know what, Eva? I'm never going to read the Bible. If it gets you to do stupid things like that, I'm never going to read the Bible. You are out of your mind.
Why?
Because it isn't your... I mean, on the one hand, it's a very nice thing for you to have done. But it's also a very dangerous thing for you to have done.
Well, you know what? I can take dangerous.
Do you remember the bit about teaching to fish versus giving the fish?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's think about that.
What? Oh, you know something about this Bible that I don't know? now this person, is this person still living in the basement or have they moved upstairs?
One day he said to me, you've been very kind to me. I have to move on, go back to my hometown where I come from, and I will always remember you. That's what he said. So he came last Christmas and thanked me and brought me gifts, and then he said, I'll do this every time because... I remember your kindness. But he has well-off relatives, but then you know what? They don't bother about him.
Now, Eva, have you read any other holy books?
Like what?
Like, I don't know.
The Quran?
The Quran, Bhagavad Gita, you name it.
Vatican
Community
with
Bob Dobbs.
I would not like to read any of those because... I'm Catholic. I just like to read the Bible.
You wouldn't necessarily even want to read them just so you could say, yeah, that's wrong?
No.
Oh.
Hey, Steve.
You're very, very narrow. Have you read...
Steve Reimer, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Did she see the contradictions here? She, on the chemical body level, is doing a great Christian thing. The ideological TV guy, Gray, can't handle that. He's a communist. So she's a communist in the chemical body, which Gray can't be.
I can't hear what
they're
saying,
a communist ideologically on the TV body. You get that, Gray, Steve?
So you can't hear Bob.
No, I can't hear him.
Can't hear you.
I can't hear you.
Doesn't matter, but Steve could.
I could. Yeah. So you're saying that in the physical body, she's the communist?
Yes.
And on the TV body, Greg's a communist.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Eva goes, okay. Good. One match.
I agree.
Well, I think that but the thing is that you're busy reading the Bible, and you can only give one home, really one basement, to one person.
Yeah, but and at least I have prevented someone from being homeless.
I understand. I appreciate that, but the thing is that...
And no Canadian would do that.
No, you're right about that.
I told him I'm a foreigner in this country, and the Bible said to the Jews, you be kind to the foreigners, but I'm the foreigner one.
Okay, so do you feel a burden from this, from the Bible and having to do all of this? Is it burdensome to you?
No. I have a duty as a God believer. I believe in God.
Hmm. I just find it so... Hold on. Let's just go around the room here.
Yes.
Steve, do you believe in God?
Yes, I do.
Well, no. Not you, Eva. Steve Reimer. I want a yes or no here.
Yes or no.
Do you... I want a yes or no on this. Do you believe in God?
As it is... okay. I guess the short answer is yes.
All right. Bob Dobbs.
I don't believe in God. I'm out to kill him as soon as possible.
All right.
And Dave Neufeld.
Yep.
You do?
You Neufeld. Get the hell out of here, Neufeld.
and Bob Marshall.
Neufeld regarded it. He got Bob, crucified by it.
Bob Marshall, you believe in God?
I believe in Bob.
You believe in Bob? Okay. Yeah. Well, so we've got, let's see,
so
two.
Do you believe in God, Greg?
We've got three. We have.
That we don't know about. But
the thing is, like, to say God, I mean, God means so many different things to different people, so it's difficult to just answer that straight up. But.
Well, yes, no.
Yeah, yes, no.
Well, in other words, you believe.
Well, systole, diastole.
So you believe in an invisible being. That's really what it's about, all right? It's an invisible being that is an all-powerful invisible being that no one else can see. It's a little gnome down at the end of the garden that only you can see, but it has vast powers.
It has a real trouble with money, apparently.
Now, what do you think's going to happen to me, Eve? I don't
believe in God, Greg?
No.
Oh, okay, good. We're
no.
on the same team.
Now, Eva, what happens when you don't believe in God?
Well,
me too.
Don't believe
what happened
in God.
To me?
I guess you're just going to go to hell.
Really?
Oh,
dear.
Your soul is going to go to hell.
What? 22 years.
So parts of my shoes are going to go to hell. Is that right?
No, all the material things are staying on earth. Your soul is the one that's going to hell.
Right. Well, I think... wait a minute. If you... Wait. Wait. What? Are you saying, Eva, that when a Christian who has followed all of God's commandments, even those that haven't really, that have read the Bible and believe in God, when they die, they take their material possessions with them?
No. They stay on earth.
Your foot soul.
Well, so if I'm going to hell, I get to take my material possessions with me?
No, only your soul.
No, your foot soul.
My soul.
Goes to hell.
My soul goes to hell.
Yes.
You mean the
is that
soul,
bad?
The thing that stock is over.
What's going to happen if my soul's going to hell? What will happen?
That's it. You're going to burn there.
Burn.
Yes.
You sound crazy.
Burn.
Yes. You are nuts, Eva.
Oh, that is
crazy.
Harsh. What is
God?
No wonder Kim Young Keel, whatever her name was, fired you.
But there's no winter.
No, there's no winter there.
No winter.
No winter.
It won't cool down a little bit, huh?
No.
For part of the time?
No.
Does it rain? And it never rains?
No, it's complete fire.
So what happens when a non-Christian dies?
Non-Christian dies? Same thing.
Going to hell, huh?
Just straight to hell. Like,
so that's why you're frightened to read their books. is that because you think you might get tainted by them, and then you might adopt something, but something might make sense, and then that might be the reason why you're going to go to hell. Aren't you concerned that – are you concerned sometimes that any action you might take throughout the day or through the month might actually be the catalyst to send you to hell?
No, I'm not afraid of that.
Why?
Because I'm a believer in good deeds and Christian ways.
And you're saying that non-Christians can't do good things then?
I don't know what they do, but I don't know.
But wait a minute, the Jews aren't Christians.
Oh, they are. I'm a Christian and a God believer. Christian because there's Jesus Christ, but the Jews don't believe in Jesus Christ, right?
Right.
But Jesus Christ is the Father, whom He's called as God.
Did it ever strike you? Yeah, did it ever strike you, even just for a moment, just in a casual moment you might have had, that all of this is just a lot of nonsense?
No, no.
That it's and it's not a burden to you? Do you have
no,
to carry this around with you?
It's what keeps me going.
Mm-hmm. Ah,
really? It's what keeps you going.
Yes. Every day before I go to work, I tell God, thank you, Lord, for waking me up in the morning, and I did not die in my sleep last night. And then when I come home,
you
I tell
die.
God, thank you, Lord.
I never do.
Don't you want to die and go to heaven? You are so filled up with contradictions. It's disgusting.
Bob says it's...
I apologize for shopping your store and keeping you going.
Bob thinks it's disgusting how many contradictions you have.
Why?
I don't know. It's just you seem. In a sense, it seems cute that you believe in these sort of strange beings, and you've got someone up there that's looking down on you, and all that. And I know it's been imposed on you as a youth, and you haven't had really much say in the matter. You've been indoctrinated, as I've been indoctrinated, I suppose. But you have a full-on indoctrination that's never going to die. You're going to keep this to your grave, and the thing is that there's no proof that I think you're going to live on after that, don't you?
I don't need proof.
Yeah, that's the problem. that's the problem. It's what do you in your life?
He must back up all things inside of.
In what do you need proof of, though?
Are you sleeping, Dave?
Well, what, you know.
Here's our prime minister talking about proof. Here, listen to this.
Okay.
I want to reply to that because it's an important issue. I don't know. A proof is a proof. What kind of a proof? It's a proof. A proof is a proof. And when you have a good proof, it's because it's proven.
Yeah, there. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. Yeah. Like, for example, when you are charged in court, you have to prove to the court, to the judge, that you're not guilty. So
all right.
You have to bring proof.
All right.
Right?
So, yes. And so you would go and say, God was looking down on me and I didn't do this.
Yes.
That should be sufficient proof, shouldn't it?
Yes.
Would you actually do that?
Yes.
But in court,
how could you ever get a lawyer to go along with that? They don't do that. They don't do that. They don't say that never happens. Or it probably does happen, but it's a very weak defense. It's very difficult to go into court and prove the existence of God.
It's my love for God. Okay, it's my love for God that keeps me going, and
all
I
right.
need any proof.
Right.
He's real or not.
You want to be stupid.
What can I do? What can I do? You're on your own.
You're on
your own with your little your imaginary friend.
Can you please tell Bob Dawes to phone me after?
All right. Okay. After. After what? After. After.
After the radio station.
Well, ain't following any Christian.
Well, it's nice to hear from you, Eva. I don't understand what's going on in your world.
And I did not hear anything he said about.
I don't understand why you don't hear anything he says.
I
doesn't
don't
seem
hear
right.
It.
I know. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. It'll get fixed one day. It'll get fixed one day. We're closer
and
to getting.
I'm a regular now. Okay?
Oh, you are. You
so
are a regular.
I wake up in the morning just to turn on the station.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Goodbye, Eva. We are closer maybe to getting things fixed. That day has been accelerated, I believe.
Hey, Greg.
Yeah, Bob.
I forgot what I was going to say.
No, good. we were talking about the suicide mission, about these pilots way back when. We're into somebody else's...
Great. Yeah. I remembered. was all our was Bob Marshall and Dave Neufeld and my cackling going on in the air? I think it's great backup music, and I'm hoping it's going out. Is it?
Well, to a certain extent, yes.
Yeah. Okay, a little bit. You don't have to have it always.
No. Sometimes I need a bit of clarity.
We can sample it.
Yeah.
It'll be sampled.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure someone out there will do it. You're on the air.
That sounds a little harsh.
Sounds a little harsh, Greg.
Okay.
Christine Hart?
No, it sounds a little harsh. Is that me? Who is
that? No, that's me.
That's you?
Yeah.
All right, the God believer over there. Well, you're going to have to explain yourself, Steve.
It's against Neufeld and Marshall, with Steve in between.
Yeah, well, he's going to have to explain himself one day. But not today, not today. It's not. He'll need to put together some notes.
But Eva's listening. She can hear me now. I'm very upset that I've been supporting a Christian person, you know, at Baldwin Foods. We're Stalinists. We're serious. You raised a good point, Greg. We don't want to help one homeless. We want to help everybody.
That's right.
Everybody.
That's right. It's short-sighted to say, oh, I've given money to a panhandler. I just saved the world.
Well,
we got to get together. There shouldn't be people panhandling. And the thing
Christian is, Jew Neufeld just said, well, if everyone did it, it would make a difference.
Well, Dave, do you live in a church?
Yeah.
Sometimes when I see the panhandlers, I and they're going to ask me, they say, hey, can you spare some money? And I often say to them, I was just about to ask you the same thing. You're on the air.
To a caller earlier, her name was Eva.
Eva, yes.
Yeah, I've heard her before on the show, but I didn't realize that she'd be doing stuff like that, you know, giving space that she has to somebody that she doesn't know who needs it. That's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it is a nice thing.
No, nobody does that, or almost nobody does that here in the West.
No.
That's true.
But and that, one has to be careful, though, Boschko.
Yeah, I understand that.
We can't be reckless in this
like
regard.
That.
Because people,
wait a minute. This is the kind of stuff Boschko's for. Boschko's always helping people.
Boschko loves this kind of stuff. He's a very generous person.
Yeah, you know, I tried to do that when I was renting an apartment.
Yeah.
You know, I found a job, so I had some money so I could move out. And I was renting this place, but then I lost my job. So, you know, it was kind of like unnecessary, but I had this large room for 2 months, and I thought, you know, nobody else, I mean, somebody, it's too big for me alone, so I went out at nights trying to look for people that needed a place to stay, but nobody took me up on it.
I think they were suspicious.
I think so, too.
You had ulterior motives.
Yeah, but that's amazing.
A good point. It is amazing what
actually
he even did.
Went out, you know, to do that.
Can't even do it.
And, you know, that strikes me as something that's, you know, that's Marxism in action.
Yeah.
You know,
he's a communist
somebody
in the chemical body.
From, you know, starting from the bottom up, they're trying to help other people. They're sharing their wealth.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with her doing that. I think that one would have to be careful. There are people who would exploit.
She's thinking while she's doing it.
That's right. Why?
That was a thought, at least.
Well, she's trying to stay out of hell.
Well, whatever the motive is, the action is, you know, still beneficial.
But would she have helped a Muslim?
Well,
probably.
You can ask her.
You think
I don't
so?
Know.
Yeah.
Oh, she would have tried to convert them.
I mean, ask what the, did she ask what the religious affiliation was of the person that she helped?
I don't know. I wish she was here now and we could ask that.
No,
maybe it was irrelevant.
Is that she canceled out her good duty by going and supporting the church.
Well, like, it seems to me that she's actually doing something that's minor, you know, but it's happening in the moment. It's taking effect immediately. But it seems like you're advocating, like, you wouldn't do it unless it was directed by the state, unless it was legislated. So
no, not necessarily. Not necessarily. I think that we have to help people, but it's...
Yeah, but only through, if the government mandated.
Yeah, in a way, yes. I think that,
like
that it, for on a realistic basis, for the safety of people and finding this one person that Eva can have in her basement for years, who doesn't do her any harm, doesn't start trying to exploit her in some way, which I assume this person did not, that might be considered as rare as somebody taking somebody into their house. because even just living with people you like is a problem,
yeah.
Let alone with people that are complete strangers, and we're living out in a car. But yes, we're going to find this more and more, especially in the United States. There's lots of people, and in Canada, I suppose, it will be increase people who are really in a desperate state. And as the capitalist system tries to restore itself, it can't give things away. It's like what Rick Santelli was saying there earlier on in the program, that I don't want to pay for my neighbor's thing. I don't want to pay for their extra bathroom. And when you start getting in that mindset.
Yeah, but we're already paying for the people who have mega dollars. Well, we're trying to bail them out.
I agree.
And we're giving, you know, these golden parachutes, so to speak, to these corporate CEOs in the millions.
I absolutely agree with you, Boschko.
I mean,
that this kind of I think that what Eve is doing is fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just that
to
project it over a whole society and have a hope, which that's what George Bush's theory was. The first George Bush president, his idea was the 1,000 points of light theory. That if only everybody just did something for you know, did something in their neighborhood, that everything would be all right.
Yeah, as long as it was the working class that did it, not the elites or the rich. They wouldn't have to dole out or dish out any of their wealth.
Because there are a lot more of them than there are of the rich.
Yeah, they suck up a lot of the much of the wealth, and they keep it. They don't care what the working class does with their money, as long as it doesn't have to come out of their pockets.
And they may have it on paper or in an electronic bank account, but that's usually invested somewhere else. So someone could easily argue that a very wealthy person is investing into the economy, giving people jobs, giving people places to live.
Yeah, also you can say that they need workers to maintain their wealth or to generate wealth.
It's also true. They can only generate so much wealth themselves as an individual. After that, you know, they can invest in a business, say, and train someone else to do the work for them. Now, you could say, that person is being subjugated by that person. Or you could say, that person is being empowered to be able to work for themselves and then do whatever they want with their own money.
Yeah.
They're not being forced
but
necessarily.
But just take a look at what the difference is in the income between the owner of the organization and the worker.
Oh, for sure. And depending on which society you're living in, if you live in Canada, there may not be that much difference. You know, if you live in another country where you don't have universal health care, et cetera, then yeah, it would be a big difference.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I didn't ask my boss how much he made, but I'm sure it was a lot more than what I made.
A lot of these billionaires and millionaires are basically, they've lost a lot of money recently as well.
The billionaires are poor. No job.
The executives in corporations are making hundreds of times, in some cases, hundreds of times more than their hourly workers.
Definitely.
And this has really increased. This has been exacerbated over the short period of time.
Can you prove that, Greg?
Evidently, I don't have the figures right now, but I heard it just the other day. It's a massive differential between the hourly workers and some of the most highest paid corporate executives.
You
and
heard this, Greg. Invisible voice told you this.
Yeah, God. the little gnome down at the end of the garden.
Yeah,
invisible gnome.
Media, your God.
Up in the sky.
Your God, Greg.
The media. The media
God.
Yeah.
The secondhand God, as Tony Schwartz said.
That's right. So.
No, you won't deal with that, Greg. You won't go into that.
What? The media God? The media God?
Yeah, you won't deal
Android
with that.
Android meme?
Well, yeah. I mean, how I should just shut down. I shouldn't. Well, I did this week. I didn't watch anything, really. I didn't pull any
clips.
Yeah,
then you came on this show, and now you're spewing facts and figures at everybody.
Remembrances of previous media
talking about Korea
encounters.
Before. Yeah, I mean, you're just spewing more media garbage. You cannot live without it, Greg.
No.
I dare you not to show up next week. You go through cold turkey. Greg laughs. The guilt of a Christian.
But it's
the
my.
Guilt of a Christian
but it's my.
There,
it's
point.
My. It's my duty. Like Eva was taking in someone into her basement. It's my duty to be here. It's my duty. I must do this. It's such a tremendous service to the community. I must be here. If I didn't do it, who would?
Therefore, you're an employee of the callers. The callers are the billionaire bosses here. We're here for them.
Yes. They are?
Yeah, the callers. We're here for the callers.
That's true. They got to stay home.
That's your alibi. You're here for the callers. They wouldn't be able to get on and do their
all 14 of them.
There's only one phone line.
Hey, let's get an update here. Let's get an update on how many people are on the stream. Oh, we've gone down to 10, and let's see, 10, 12. We've got 12 people on the World Wide Web listening. Because a lot of people thought when I played the end theme, I would imagine, that the show was done. It was finished, over. They just said, okay, 10:30, it's over. But it's carrying on. I have again, we're going into long-form international connection here. Who do
February
I have on?
22nd.
Who do I have on the
11/11/22?
Who do I have on the air right now? Who's on the phone?
Here, I'm here, Bushko.
Oh, Bushko, I forgot.
Yeah.
sorry, you were so silent for a while. Anyway, Bushko.
Another thing I wanted to mention was that I heard on another show that Bob said that he's a member of the elite. People call in and they talk about the elite, and he said that he's part
of the
elite.
He's the cash flow, Greg. What do you think of that?
Isn't that kind of like being, I don't know, he's on this show, so isn't that kind of like shooting yourself in the foot? That seems to me, you know, like...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's destroying his credibility, is it?
The elite are in this like really rigorous class warfare that they're engaged in continuously, and now he's a part of this show.
Yeah.
Doesn't his
it's an oscillating
don't his neighbors
spiral.
In that gated community
spiral,
see him as like
oscillating baroque spiral, quote Bob Marshall. It's tetrad.
You are your own enemy. You are your own anti-Bob.
Yeah, I used to be on CKL and say I'm out there with the police beating the hell out of the demonstrators, and the next minute I'm with the demonstrators beating the police. I'm all over the place.
You're on all sides, huh, Bob?
What?
You're on all sides. You're everywhere.
I'm on all sides and keeping the thing going, because the propaganda is not the messages. It's keeping the thing going is the propaganda.
There's the God theory again.
Well, don't your neighbors in the gated community that you live in, don't they see
you? Hold on. Yes, go ahead, Bushko.
Yeah, I was saying, don't his neighbors in the gated community or the closed-off community that he said he lives in, don't they see him as defeating their purpose?
Knocked off again.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that?
Too much for him.
You didn't hear that, right? See,
what?
Steve can back me up here, right? I got, just talking technically here, we'll get back to your question
like,
in a minute.
Aren't they trying to, try to get Bob out of their neighborhood? He's kind of like doing a disservice to them?
We'll get back to that in just a second, Bushko. I just want Steve to acknowledge that all of these phones that I'm working with are all coming through one pot, as we call them, on the console. And so I don't have separate control of each caller or each phone line. And it makes it very difficult for me to allow or to properly balance it. So if you think that it's just badly engineered, that's the best I can do. I've got all of this streaming through one pot. So for those of you that are technically... knowledgeable, that's what I'm dealing with here. So Bushko,
Steve will back you up on that statement.
Steve will back me up, but there's only one pot there, right? One, it says phone. So it'd be nice to have a couple, but for the two lines, so I could balance them out and adjust them. But
yeah, it'd be nice if you had some more, because I was thinking about calling in when Eva was on the air, but I had to wait, I thought. So.
I know. It would be nice for a program like this, it would be nice to have maybe five lines where... And having some choice where I could go from one to the other and so on, it would be better, but that just isn't the case. It would have been nice to have it planned into the studios, but it didn't happen. So we're dealing with what we got. Bob, Bushko's basic premise here is that why are the people who are living within your gated community putting up with you? Because you're on all sides of this struggle, and at any given time... the people would find you their enemy. So
they don't know I'm here.
They don't know you're there.
Yeah, right, swim in the pool at night when no one's there.
Mm.
Hey, Dave, you got to keep it down. Connie just walked into the room, so Dave's all excited. But, hey, Connie, why aren't people shooting me in this gated community? Maybe Connie has an answer. She says I'm under another alias.
All right.
Another?
Another one, huh? Okay. Does that answer your question, Boshko?
How many do I have to keep track of?
Okay. Thanks for calling, Boshko, and phone in again, even today, if we continue to be on the air here,
as
seems like we're going all the way till noon. This is just to do a little bit of introduction here. My name is Greg Duffel. I've been on the air since 7 o'clock this morning, and I filled in for Jeff Wiseman on Twilight Spirits and played some tunes. And then it's 8:30. I took over as my other alias, as Greg Duffel, the International Connection show host. And I have with me Steve Reimer, who's a former CIUT radio personality. And I've got Bob Dobbs, Bob Marshall, and Dave Neufeld calling in from various locations around the world. And right now we're going to go to another call. And the call, I'm going to give the phone number right now. It's 416-595-1655, should you wish to call in and create a topic or just a comment on the general goings-on. You're on the air.
You're basically saying that you were treated like some sort of exile.
There you are again. Someone's sampling the program, giving us a little bit back. It's very interesting. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you for taking notice of what we're doing. It's good. How are they doing that? How are they...
Well, it's possible they could just be grabbing the stream and then just chopping it
up.
Or it might be an old broadcast.
Maybe.
That's right.
Do you know who Olivia Newton-John is?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Olivia Newton-John was in Greece in the late 70s. And I remember her doing the Eurovision Song Contest of 1973. And she had this horrible song that she was singing for England. She was singing for England. And... ABBA had their big hit Waterloo. You know that song?
Oh, yeah.
Waterloo. Of course, Waterloo won. And Olivia Newton-John, who was talking up the song before she went on and sang it, after the song, she said, I didn't like the song anyway, after she lost. Right after she lost. Anyway, Olivia Newton-John and Patrick McDermott were together for 9 years. Then he disappeared.
He's never been found.
He wasn't on board.
One of the biggest mysteries in Hollywood. He completely disappeared off the face of the earth.
He wasn't on board the fishing boat Freedom when it returned to shore in San Pedro, California, after an overnight excursion. Investigators say he'd visited Newton-John the day before with flowers, bitter farewell, and ended their relationship. McDermott was seen boarding the vessel that evening with his fishing gear and a duffel bag. Copyrighted. I must add, I got a royalty off that one. Listen to this, Bob. The 22 passengers and three crew members on board gave conflicting reports. Of course, 22 passengers would give conflicting reports. If it had been 23, they would have been solid straight down the line. But with 22 under Bob control, they're all over the place. He got off the boat. He got on the boat. He took off in a jetpack.
Very good.
He took off in a jetpack. He did all kinds of things. The 22 passengers and three crew members on board gave conflicting reports about his whereabouts, both during and at the end of the trip. Police have determined that McDermott did indeed board the vessel, fished with the others, and socialized on the boat, both on June 30th and the next day, July 1st. However, the witness accounts conflict about what happened as the boat neared shore on the afternoon of July 1st. No one is quite sure when they last saw McDermott in the last 30 minutes of the voyage. Remember, this is Olivia Newton-John's nine-year-old boyfriend. Not nine-year-old boyfriend. A boyfriend she had for 9 years had a relationship with. So McDermott paid his bar and kitchen tab, which consisted of two hot dogs and a Coke, a kitchen receipt shows. Then he seems to have vanished. Some witnesses told police they thought they saw McDermott get off the boat when it docked and walk towards the parking lot. But they cannot be sure it was him. 10 days passed before relatives began a search for McDermott. They first became alarmed on July 6th when he didn't show up for a family gathering. Relatives found his car still parked at the San Pedro Marina, where he'd left it when he boarded the fishing vessel. Investigators then discovered McDermott had left personal items on the boat, including his wallet. As police looked into his background, they learned that McDermott had been facing a mountain of debt, including being ordered by a court to pay back child support payments for his 15-year-old son from a prior marriage. A Coast Guard investigation concluded that he was most likely drowned at sea, but some people believe that he may still be alive. Investigators have theorized that McDermott may have staged his death to escape financial pressures. Since McDermott disappeared, there have been hundreds of supposed sightings of him in Mexico. Private investigators and some police investigators speculate that McDermott may be hiding in the small village of Sayulita, 40 miles outside the resort town of Puerto Vallarta, which is, I think, where Osama bin Laden is. And a community of expatriates in Sayulita work as deckhands for the mega yachts owned by billionaire South American businessmen. Maybe he's living in the basement or in the lower deck of one of those fishing vessels. We spoke to dozens. This is Scott Epperson, a Coast Guard spokesman in Long Beach. We spoke to dozens of witnesses on that vessel, and we concluded any reported sightings of McDermott getting off that boat, we concluded any reported sightings were not credible. Although the investigation is officially closed, anybody's got tips. So if you have tips as to where, what's his name, Mr. McDermott, Patrick McDermott is, if you have any tips, he's 48 years old at the time of his disappearance 3 years ago, so that would make him 51. He's 5'9" tall and weighs 140 pounds with brown eyes and salt and pepper hair. So if you see him, take him back
so
to
that's
a living...
Greg, that's my exact measurements. Take, 140 pounds,
yeah.
Often 144, 5'9", brown hair.
And then the 22 passengers, could
yep.
be. If you do find Mr. McDermott, do take him back to Olivia Newton-John. I'm sure she'd be happy
myself.
To see him.
I will return myself on the appropriate alias at that time.
So.
This is a synchronicity, Greg. You just brought this up, and it totally fits with me.
Yeah. The Turkish Prime Minister, Tayyip, I have trouble pronouncing this name because...
Tayyip Erdoğan, try that.
It's Erdoğan?
Tayyip Erdoğan,
what's that?
That's his name, that's how you say it in Turkish.
Really?
Yep. Go ahead, Greg, go ahead. Just move.
All right, okay, sorry. Oh, let's take a call.
Go.
Okay, you're on the air.
Patrick's in my basement.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Down there?
Yeah.
I haven't heard from you in a while.
He's been here for years.
I haven't heard from you in a while. Have you tried to phone in?
No. Well, about an hour ago.
Oh, you did? And it was... What happens when you phone in? Is it a busy signal?
No, I just got a ringing.
You know, there's an... I won't get into the tacticals. Yeah, I got to go do something and cut that off or... I used to have a handle on that. Remember the third line?
Yes. Yeah,
I used to have a handle on that, but I've been denied doing that. Because I can't configure things in the manner in which I would like to configure them.
Right.
I've been told that that is perverse.
Right.
And we've played no promos,
and I'll go,
Greg.
And I'll go to hell. You're right. There are no promos to play today.
No promos?
No, there's
ads.
No
advertising?
There's nothing. There's nothing.
When
I don't
Bob
have...
When Bob Marshall shows up,
notice,
everything gets cleared out.
Notice there was no warning.
Of?
There was no...
Oh,
yeah, the warning.
Yeah. Can we say it then, Greg?
The,
here
and no Andy.
To do with anybody who said, is that how you say it?
The views expressed are not those of CKLN Radio Incorporated. The views expressed may be offensive to some people.
That's
viewer
you,
discretion
you
is advised.
You were
okay.
In charge. That's
okay.
Why.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that's the. But there's no. I don't have one to play. I suppose I could go find one. You want me to go find it? No, I'm
when
not going to go find it. I'm not going to find it.
When we have
yeah, when
five
I have
minutes.
When I have 5 minutes, I'll go find it. When I have five
in
minutes,
a timely
yeah,
manner.
In a timely manner.
In a timely manner.
Did you hear about the agnostic, dyslexic insomniac who lies awake at night wondering whether there's a dog?
Yeah, looking in the mirror?
I don't know that part of it.
Oh, a dog is a god spelled backwards.
Oh, right. Yeah, but that's the dyslexic part.
Right. So anyway,
hey,
nice
Greg,
to hear
who
from
is this caller? Who is this caller?
This is he's known to us as Ted, I think.
Right. Yeah.
And
hi, Bobs.
And I met
hey,
Ted.
Yes.
I met Ted.
Yes.
And a few weeks ago, and I was concerned that I'd broken the continuum with him. That because he actually saw me, saw a physical Greg Duffel, that it just ruined everything. And now he has this image of, that is not the image that I had of Greg Duffel.
No.
And now I'm willing to accept any image I have in front of me. And I accept Ted as being Ted.
I think that may be the only advantage to actually being on a commercial radio station is you might have an ad maybe once in a while, like on a back page or a bus stop. And so people at least don't have that shock effect, you know, when they
have more than that. Those ads for Aaron and Mike... Those are the worst ads I've ever seen, where they're roaming around a grocery store. And you don't know these things. Maybe Dave and Bob Marshall know this, but aren't they awful? Why would you want to watch
horrible.
It?
Always talking to like people who just are marginal or don't know what they're talking about.
Come
on now, that's what we're good at.
Why would someone want to listen to that program? Seeing this woman putting down this guy for reasons unknown, just because I think she thinks he's stupid. I mean, what kind of a relationship is that with two people on the radio?
That's archetypal, Greg. That's everybody's relationship. That's why Bob Marshall's alone. He avoids that.
And he's.
But I see what Greg is saying. The guy responds like a buffoon. It's all just cringing. You watch it, it's like, oh, it makes you want to cringe.
Yeah, the pretending is too obvious.
And you'd think that if you would watch or listen to the program, that he would be getting back at her on the show in a very, very big way. That if that really was their relationship, you know it's phony, but you wonder why. You wonder even why they're advertising it, why they're shooting these commercials on film and putting them together and just ramming it down our throats. Well, I think that I suppose this would sell too if there were ads where we're. Yeah. I mean, a sell. I think it'd be an amazing sell but I somehow think that diminishes a program. That when you have to ram it down people's throats or say, if you phone in this week, you'll win. You have a chance to win $50,000. They're paying you to listen. I'm not paying anybody to listen to this show.
They're paying to make sure people listen to the advertising. Yeah. Pay for the gift.
And why would you want to pay people to listen to your radio show? It seems counterproductive. Just put on something half decent. I mean, if they have resources, don't they? They're getting paid a lot of money. There are probably producers and this and that. Mm-hmm. And they, out of a four-hour show on a weekday morning, they probably speak for, 20 minutes? Half an hour? Tops in that 4 hours? It's mainly commercials and just introducing records. How easy can it get?
Music.
I did this show this
MMR
morning.
Music. Oh.
I did this show this morning, an hour and a half of playing records. And the toughest part of doing it, at least the show that I did, and I'm not saying that it's particularly good.
You're
playing.
Not saying anything, Greg.
I'm playing other people's stuff, but it's not that hard to do. I have a record collection. I picked it up at Goodwill. I had bought some retail years ago, some records, but mainly I picked them up.
Did you play some Zappa?
I did play some Zappa. I played.
That's the first thing I heard this morning.
I played Willie the Pimp.
Yeah.
And then the last, I'd hoped you would hear it, Bob. I played. Hold on. Let me see.
He's looking at the album. He's trying to figure it out.
I think I made love to you. Did I have a problem with you?
I swear that.
Yeah.
Yes,
where's Dave? Dave's talking to Connie or Carol, whatever it is. In the kitchen. I had to mute it. They're over there. He's feeding him.
Susie cream cheese.
Or he's sticking it in her. I don't know.
They're feeding each other.
Yeah, I think blowjobs, something going on over there.
Are they recording it with their cell phones, though? That's what the real
question. I think I played The Closer You Are. That's
Oh, yeah, the 50s song.
No, it was an instrumental. Maybe I didn't play that. It was the last thing I played. Hold on, let me find it. This is important. This is important.
Greg's got to get this on the record.
I've got to do that.
You felt close to me, Greg?
Yeah. I don't know what I played.
Oh, come on.
I don't know what I played. All right, let me
play the game.
Well, all right, let me put it on.
Yeah, let's play it.
All right, hold on.
Here we go, listeners. Frank Zappa, CBC special composer of the 20th century.
It's from a record called Zappa. Do you know that one?
No.
Them or Us.
Oh, Them or Us. Yes, good.
It was an instrumental.
Okay, Marco Wilka.
Let me see here.
Joe Waka is a weird name.
Do you see how awkward this is?
Yeah.
This is incredibly... Oh, God.
Steve, fill in for him.
I can't reach.
Dave can't.
I can't reach.
Can't reach.
Greg's headphone cord is just not quite long enough. He actually had special headphones just for me today. I feel really special.
Yeah,
he made a point of making sure that I at least had headphones that functioned, which is sometimes hard to do.
Danny once got a spanking from Miss Barbara Fish.
Yes.
You remember that?
Yes. Stevie Spanking is what it's called.
Okay,
go a little further, get the guitar part.
Hold on, I'm trying to find out what thing I played earlier. Hold on, I know it was right at the beginning. Let me try that.
And I was sleeping. I missed it.
Okay. No, I didn't play this one.
This is scattered sample play. Good. Ben, listen to the Herd of My Sample. What the heck is this? Stevie Wonder's spanking.
All right, let me put on the other one. I got to find out what I played.
This is fantastic, Greg.
Yeah?
Uh-oh, we got a problem, Greg. Connie's got a console. We got to go.
All right, okay. I'll talk to you later.
Connie rule.
We can handle it, Bob. I'll talk to you later. Who's on the air with me now?
Still Ted.
Oh, hi, Ted.
Yeah.
We're just working through this Zappa business.
Right.
They can be out listening. I think they've been on long enough. That's a pretty good stint for them.
It is.
What have you been up to, Ted?
Bit of this, bit of that.
Yeah. I saw Ted at a meeting. We had a little meeting of interested listeners, and Ted was good enough to come along. And actually, just at this moment, I can give you some of the basic contact information for the show. It's internationalconnection@rogers.com. Again, this is a show normally heard between 8:30 and 10:30 on Sunday mornings. And we're just going long today because the people that are doing the show, who do the show after us, haven't arrived. So we generally carry on.
Well, at least I've seen you in the flesh. These other guys you've had on there could just be figments of their own imagination.
I think this is what I played. This is it. This is what I played earlier.
It's a little hot, Drake.
Is it, you think?
Yeah.
Okay, there. Is that good now, Steve?
Better.
All right. Yeah, that's from Frank Zappa. What's this? All right, what is it called? Whatever footwear. That's what it's called.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's what I played earlier. Okay, the phone number here is 416-595-1655. We've got two lines now, and you're on the air.
Okay, I'm going to hang up then?
Oh, yeah. Well, if you want to, you can stay on with the other caller. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Greg. It's Dave.
Hey, Dave. Wow, yeah. Hi, Dave.
Oh, hi, Greg. It's Dave.
What's up, Dave?
Hi, Greg. Steve.
Oh,
loopy doopy.
He agrees with me, I guess. That's Dave One, a recording of Dave One. I guess
Andy's on vacation.
I guess so. It's rare to not hear from him, but just filling in here.
Haven't heard a weather report in a while.
No, or a traffic report.
Or a traffic.
Maybe he has a February blahs.
You ready for another meeting?
Yeah, I could be enticed to go.
Yeah, okay. All right. I think I might be arranging one. We can get together again.
Okay.
And have a little chat.
Yeah.
And catch up on important details. I think you'll be interested in what's been going on.
Okay.
Since our last meeting. Anyway, Ted, thanks a lot for calling.
Okay, great.
All right.
Bye.
So the number here, if you want to phone in the waning moments of the program, 416-595-1655. Now, this, I'm going to call him Tayyip Erdogan, and I know that that isn't how you pronounce it. Do you know how to pronounce that?
No. Nope.
Maybe somebody can. It's just so counterintuitive reading it and saying it. I've got to get used to it. He seems like an important figure. You're on the air.
Is there supposed to be an answering machine at the end of the line? Because I think someone might get some funny messages.
Does the answering machine actually work?
Well, it came on a couple of times or something.
Really? Okay, I'll have to check that. I don't know how to operate that.
I should really take that off the hook when I do the program because it would just...
Someone might get a surprise.
You never know. You never know. It'd probably people playing clips.
Yeah. So somebody said that the rich guys were losing money. Well, the AIG guys, they were found having $1 million party a day after getting the $25 billion.
Yeah, they were celebrating.
So I know. You make guy defend that ridiculous point.
Who said that? That was a ridiculous point made by Steve Reimer,
That would be me.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
He's gone over to the other side with the damn Bobster.
Well,
take him out and shoot him, Greg.
All right, I will do that after the program. He's got a reprieve of an hour, seeing as the other programmer didn't come in.
Oh, I see.
All right, so I'll take him out and have done with him in about 25 minutes. I have to clean up here first.
Yeah, okay then.
Okay, thanks a lot. Now, the Turkish PM, Prime Minister, he said that the results of the Israeli elections, showing a jump in support to right-wing parties, painted a very dark picture for the future of the region. Quoting Erdogan, "Unfortunately, we have seen that the Israeli people have voted for these rightist parties, and that makes me a bit sad," he told two Turkish newspapers in an interview. "Unfortunately, the election has painted a very dark picture." Very dark picture. And it got darker when the Prince of Darkness, Benjamin Netanyahu, was put in power by Shimon Peres, I suppose. You're on the air.
Hi. Hello, Greg?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I guess Bob left, eh?
Yes, Connie. Now, we're saying that he would be at, what time, 6:37 in the morning in Hawaii, and his wife is doing business of some sort, where she does some consultation business over the phone.
At the moment
that one of these consultations happens or is about to occur, even if it's at 6:30 in the morning, we're out of there. There's no hanging on. It wouldn't matter what we were talking about, how important or how useless it was. We'd be gone. So.
Okay, anyway, but you have Dave and the other Bob there, right?
No, I only have... Bob was being good enough to route to both Dave Neufeld, who is a music producer and former associate here at CKLN many years before I got here, in the early, early days, the pure years of CKLN, many have called them, and Steve Reimer is here with me in the studio at the moment.
Okay. Anyway, I just wanted to ask, you know, like with the American dollar, I just wonder, I was going to ask Bob what he thinks, how they're keeping the American dollar from not going down. How are they keeping it up the way they're doing it?
It does seem strange, doesn't it?
Something really weird's going on with the American dollar. And when it crashes, it's going to crash real hard. And I just wonder what Bob was thinking about that.
Yeah, well, we can get his opinion on that another time, but it's a good observation to make, and it does seem to be acting counterintuitively. We have gold going up, but of course...
There's so much bad news with the stock market, and yet the American dollar keeps going up.
Well, I think that that's why the dollar, the gold price, which is denominated in U.S. dollars... If you probably compared the gold price a month ago and the increase in the U.S. dollar, or is the gold moving to reflect the price of the U.S. dollar being higher, it's very difficult to figure this out, and it has moved in very strange ways, U.S. dollar. And if it does crash, and if it is measured against gold in any way, the predictions of gold going to $1,500, or even some people are saying $3,000 an ounce, that may be possible.
Yeah, it just seems like the whole everything hinges on that, and they're playing a game with that, and I just don't like that the way they're pulling this off. It's just the news media is just so full of crap. It's just awful.
Well, what do you think that they're putting forth?
Well, they're always saying that the economy is basically sound and everything's. Everything is going to come back. The turnaround in a couple of years, I don't know, it just doesn't...
Yeah, they're saying early next year it's going to be okay, and it's sort of an unusual recession that'll... But I remember recessions in the past that were pretty bleak.
Yeah.
The one in the early 80s was... I remember stores selling product at extremely low prices. I'll never forget the art shop, which was up on Yonge Street around Eglinton. And I remember looking in their window in around 1981, and just things were just dirt cheap because they just needed to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And that was really, I think, at the trough of that particular recession. And then it just sort of bounced on along the bottom for another couple of years and then popped in 83, 84.
Yeah.
And
anyway, so I just, maybe I'll call back next
all
week
right.
and see where Bob
yeah,
Pinto said, because I'm sure he has some pretty good insight into what's
going on. You can email him.
And it won't make any sense, but we'll, it'll be interesting to hear it nonetheless. It'll be his,
show, you know?
his theory is just as good as anybody else's.
That's right.
And maybe, it might be really pragmatic and it might help us.
Yeah, right.
So, there are. It's very difficult to figure out the whole economic system. Obviously, it's so complicated. I think mm-hmm. that's what I notice about when I watch all these shows. Just how complicated they've made capitalism,
especially with all the derivative securities and everything like that. That's being
hedge
claimed,
funds,
the hedge funds, and
it's you. How could you figure it out? It's almost made. It's got more and more complicated, so that makes it more challenging to make money, and then suddenly you find a little pocket and suddenly you've got tons of money, and then that closes up, and it's because somebody else has opened something else, and then we find out that almost all the transactions are fraudulent, and it just backs up my point, I think, that we inevitably have to move to communism. This is just too complicated and too silly to keep going, and it'll take a while. I don't think I'll see it. They think they can pull their way out of this. They think that they can pull out of the nosedive, but I don't think so. But getting back to the Turkish prime minister, as I've been trying to get to for a little while there, took a couple of calls. He's talking about this Israeli election, and at the time of this that I pulled this article, which was probably last week, Israel's centrist Kadena party, their foreign minister Zippy Livni, was in ahead, and it looked like she was going to form the government, but that has proven to not be correct. Even in this article, they're saying it was unlikely to form the government. And Benjamin Netanyahu, who I thought was up on charges at some point, wasn't he? Weren't they trying to criminalize him? They somehow get out of that. They were all the other prime minister too. Was being accused of criminal acts. I can't remember who that was right now. So Erdogan urged the next Israeli government to look at how it conducted policies and actions toward the Palestinians and to lift what he called an embargo on the Palestinians, adding, Israel's tough stance against the Palestinians was failing. Quoting him, with the ceasefire, the embargo should be lifted. The Palestinian people should be freed from an open-air prison they are living in right now. This is against human rights. Erdogan sounded upbeat on Turkey's role as a peace mediator in the Middle East, despite the Israeli media reports suggesting Israel is not willing to take part in any mediation involving Ankara after the prime minister's outburst in Davos when he walked out on Shimon Peres. And, of course, the Israelis always want the Americans there as their bargaining agent. I don't quite understand that, but I guess they like it when the fix is in. The Turkish prime minister did not agree with the views that Turkey's role as a mediator in the Middle East, and in particular as a central negotiator between Israel and Syria, suffered short-term damage because of Erdogan's fierce criticism of Israel and defense of Hamas. We were not the ones who wanted this negotiation's role. In negotiations between Syria and Israel, both countries wanted Turkey to be the mediator. That is why we took the part in it. The same happened with the Israeli and Pakistani talks. Wow, there were Israeli and Pakistani talks?
Is that what it says?
Yeah. I thought I'd read it wrong, but could be. I didn't know about that. There's a dispute between Israel and Pakistan? I don't know. He said critics misunderstood Turkish foreign policy if they thought the government was siding with Hamas or was against Israel. Turkey wanted peace in the region and was defending the helpless, in this case, the civilians in Gaza. So good for him. In a phone call expected soon with U.S. President Barack Obama, Erdogan said he would urge him to take a different approach to the Middle East than the Bush administration. Quoting Erdogan, I am expecting President Obama to be the voice of the voiceless and the protector of the unprotected. How likely do you think that's going to be, Steve?
Pretty unlikely.
Yeah, I think so too. Oh, there's one thing. I wanted to do some research on this before I got on the air. And it's that it's about Obama. And whenever we see him now, or whenever I see him in news conferences, he is always up against a yellow curtain. Have you noticed that?
No.
It's a very
much in the last
There's a
while.
Very resplendent yellow curtain that he stands. It seems backlit. And
I wonder what the spaceman has to say about that.
I'm looking right now. I don't need. Is he still on? Is that spaceman still on?
He's still
on. He's still on. Huh? Do you think he says the same thing about me? Is that Duffel still on the air?
I don't think so.
Know. There's no recognition of it.
I turned it on last
yellow
night. It was all JFK stuff.
And... Oh, really? Again? We do that sometimes.
Oh, there's nothing wrong.
The sun through the yellow curtains. Yeah, let's see. Maybe I'm sure somebody is talking about this, and I'm just going to an article now. Because I meant to do this. Yeah, they have these. No, that's not it. That's not it. It's about yellow curtains at a hotel. Barack Obama. Nobody's noticed this with the yellow curtains. And I had an employee once that worked for me in my company. And he was a black guy. And he used to wear yellow quite a lot. Mm-hmm. Which, a certain shade of yellow. Because he felt that it showed off his skin tone better when I asked him, because I noticed that it was sort of an odd color of
yeah, it's
of
like,
yellow.
Hey, you're wearing black, you know, blue.
I noticed
green,
he really yellow. Liked yellow. Hmm. And Barack Obama seems to like that yellow tone as well. So, but nobody
seems...
Maybe
he's trying to say caution, you know, or yellow is caution. I don't know. I haven't particularly noticed it, so... It might be one of those things where
yeah, I'll have to,
when you're looking for something, you kind of see it more often.
Yeah, I know that that I see it all the time when Obama's at a press conference or at some kind of media event that they set up.
Is there any banners? Like, is it?
Anything? No, it's just there's this strange yellow curtain behind him.
Has anyone else that's listening noticed any sort of trend?
I don't know. 416-595-1655, if you can back me up here at least, that Obama is often standing in front of a yellow curtain. Yellow curtain. You're on the air. You're on the air.
The thing you said about the stool test, I'm a little confused because we've had that in Canada for years.
A stool test? Stool test? Was that stool? Like...
Might be...
School test?
School test?
Was that from today?
No, I don't think so.
Hmm. It's astounding what people are getting up to. People are listening to the program and pulling things from it. Hmm. And then we don't know what
the point
context
of
is.
Coming back.
Yeah, yeah. I know I shouldn't have let those get out.
Absolutely. That's right.
Okay. Oh, here it is. Here it is. There's something about the yellow curtains here. Let me see. I'm going to find out about the yellow curtains. Find on this page, yellow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yellow curtains swoop on for nearly 20 feet. The walls are interrupted every few inches with molding. What are they talking about? It was Barack Obama's first big press conference as president, so you might have expected a little flap in the unflappability. We know he can do the big speeches, but he had only one mildly pressure point press conference during the campaign, so he hadn't had much practice. And the East Room is the kind of room that can make a person nervous, or at least jittery. It's the White House's biggest room, and the decor seeks to achieve the same effect as the playing of Hail to the Chief. Yellow curtains swoop on for nearly 20 feet. The walls are interrupted every few inches with molding, and from the ceiling hang gold and crystal chandeliers the size of Mini Coopers. As if that weren't enough to make Obama take a few short breaths, every person, camera, chair, and boom mic was aimed at him. Even Ronald Reagan, who knew a thing about performing in front of an audience, confused the Mediterranean and Caribbean in his first press conference. Just as one member of the press confused Iran and Vietnam. I think Obama started to say a state. He started Ottawa. He started saying Iowa in the Canadian press conference he had with Harper.
Any of that stuff?
I saw a little bit of it. It is disturbing to be a Canadian if you have any, I would imagine, if you had any nationalist feelings about Canada, to see Harper
diminishing us so much, our role in the world, or I don't know any other country that does that, that is always so subservient to their neighbor. Just constantly saying we're friends, that's one thing. But to say we'd be nothing without them, and this kind of, I don't know the exact quotes, but it's pretty close to that. It's embarrassing.
It's all fake.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, why should we believe it when he says that if we don't necessarily believe when he's saying other things?
I know, but
right?
Yeah.
Or is it a sense of a pandering?
Well, it's just that he's always saying, Harper's always saying disturbing things.
Okay.
And then, right before, I saw Wolf Blitzer on the Situation Room. The Situation Room. You know the Situation Room? He stands in a Situation Room. And I wonder whether this is another clip from the show that someone's found. You're on the air.
I'm boring? I'm boring?
I'm boring?
I'm boring? I'm boring? Wolf Blitzer had Peter Mansbridge on the Situation Room, which I thought was a major step for Peter Mansbridge.
Yeah.
And it was only a little five-minute thing. And it was about Obama because I guess Peter Mansbridge had come down to Washington to do an interview with Obama talking about the imminent trip to Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what it appeared to be the point of the trip, as Wolf was saying, was to convince us, Canada, the government, to stay longer in Afghanistan.
Okay.
To pressure us or to encourage us, mm-hmm. say that we're doing good work there and that we should stay there longer. And then when Obama actually arrived here, he said that he hadn't talked to him about that. So it was an interesting bait and switch there. I'm sure that they did, or they just know already that Canada, we're going to be there forever. We will be in Afghanistan for as long as they are, and maybe, and that's going to be forever. We're never going to leave there.
Hmm.
So, so this battle between, as I was talking about before, the battle between Turkey and Israel now, the Israeli military on this is last Saturday disassociated itself from remarks critical of Turkey made by one of its generals after Ankara described them as unacceptable and demanded an urgent clarification. The remarks by Major General Avi Mizrahi, commander of the Israeli Army headquarters, followed a row sparked by Israel's offensive in Gaza last month and contained, quote, unacceptable claims and nonsense targeting our prime minister and our country, the foreign ministry said. The Israeli ambassador to Turkey was summoned to the foreign ministry on Saturday and handed a note of protest, the statement said, adding that, quote, Israeli authorities were asked for an urgent clarification, unquote. In Jerusalem, the Israeli army later issued a statement saying Mizrahi's comments, the Israeli general's remarks, were not representative of its views. Quoting them, General Mizrahi said some things that might be construed as critical of Turkey. The army spokesman wishes to clarify that this is not the official position of the army. On Friday, the Turkish media quoted Mizrahi as saying Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who vehemently criticized Israel's action in the Gaza Strip, quote, should first look in the mirror, and spoke about the Ottoman massacres of Armenians during World War I and the Kurdish conflict in Turkey. So I guess if Turkey recognizes that they're doing a genocide, then the Israeli genocide, if that's what it is, the attempted genocide is okay. He has no right to talk, this guy, because of Turkey's record. In the past, the new prime minister of Turkey can't speak out against what he sees as criminal actions in Gaza. The Turkish military also denounced Mizrahi's remarks, saying they, quote, distort the realities and are excessive, unfortunate, and unacceptable. Such comments can harm national interests and relations between the two countries. We expect the Israeli general staff, which we believe places importance on relations with the Turkish armed forces, to clarify the issue. And it, there's really been a lot of strain between Israel and Turkey. It's been an Israeli Jewish state's main regional ally since the two signed a military cooperation accord in 1996. And, of course, it this recent tension comes out of the aforementioned January 29th storming out of Erdogan in a at Davos, Switzerland, when he was clashing with Shimon Peres. And the British government has been has ordered the release of the minutes of two key cabinet meetings, which paved the way for the invasion of Iraq. Have you heard about this? That they want these minutes?
It's very news to me.
It's very difficult to get minutes of meetings. I know that personally. Very difficult. They have them. They have them. Sometimes they have them, sometimes they don't. But then you can't get them, even if you're someone who's involved in an organization. You're on the air.
Yeah, with what you're regarding with Turkey and Israel.
Yes.
They have a problem there because Turkey wanted to have the Armenian genocide go on record at the UN, and of course Israel was completely against it, that there would be no term of genocide allowed. And the people who did the genocide in Turkey of the Armenians were called the Young Turks, and the Young Turks got a hold of the Ottoman Empire power lever, and right away they did the hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Armenian genocide. And the Young Turks were all Jewish. And that's what the problem is. And that's why they're having the trouble. They're trying to throw genocide at the Turks. When in fact, the same people that did the genocide in Gaza were the same people that did the genocide
in Armenia.
That is the problem. That nobody's talking about
just
that
truth. Just to clarify.
Okay.
Just so that, sorry. Just to clarify for a second.
Yeah.
So you're saying that the Armenian genocide,
yes,
there were people involved in the Armenian genocide
called
the Young Turks.
Yes.
That's interesting because that term has been used for a radio show recently. They're called the Young Turks, and I think a television program.
Well, you Google it up, and you find the information.
I will.
And it was the Young Turks that did the Armenian genocide were Jewish, and they just did another genocide on the Gazas. Same people, okay?
All right. Well, look it up. Thanks.
Okay, please do it. Thanks.
Well, news to me, but we'll, I'm not saying it didn't exist. I'll, again, I'll have to do some work on that. We learn things from our listeners. Or we have to do further research. Well, thank you, Steve, for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And thank you for sticking around, both Steve and the audience. And thanks, Bob, Marshall Bob Dobbs, and David Neufeld, the great Canadian music producer.
Hi, Dave. Bye, Dave. Enjoy the time in Hawaii.
And we hope to see you back next week during our regular time between 8:30 and 10:30 on Sunday morning. And we're out of here.
I want to take this opportunity of saying that if it weren't for you and you and you, Mr. and Mrs. Publi, this would not have been possible. And here's hoping that 25 years from now, we'll all meet again and celebrate golden anniversary.
Friends, I'm just glad this session ended.
Thank you for listening.
Au revoir. Goodbye.
Au revoir.
Gonna get rid of him. Transfer him out of the regiment. He's a bad egg, a troublemaker.